One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice. Follow the yellow brick road. Follow the yellow brick road.
All right, so it is the Midweek Drive on Wednesday. We know that. We're not saying it's the Midweek Drive live because clearly this is a pre-recording, but it's a combination of Royal Radio and the Midweek Drive because as we utter these words, Kathy Manso, ace Midweek Drivette, will actually be in the wonderful world of the new Theatre Royal Lincoln. Will she be doing that? Well, she'll be attending her first ever, I say again, her first ever British pantomime. What you say, a pantomime at Easter? Yeah, I know it gets even crazier and more wacky than that, because not only that, we also welcome, of course, Royal Radio co-host extraordinaire and, of course, key man behind marketing at the joys of the new Theatre Royal Lincoln. It's Oliver Ashby. How are you, Ollie?
I'm not too bad, Alex. How are you?
Excellent. Well, as I say, I feel as though this has been something we've kind of been mulling over for over a year now, ever since she was actually doing her postgraduate studies, etc. We thought, how can Kathy, who's experienced obviously life in Malta, life in South Africa, life as an English teacher in Australia, life in Ukraine, life in Poland, life in Lincoln, probably the strangest of all of those particular areas.
It probably is, yeah.
Yeah, our Miami soul, her first ever pantomime. Kathy Manso, are you looking forward to the new Theatre Royal Lincoln Easter pantomime?
I am looking forward to it because I can finally go. So, yes, I'm very much excited.
Yeah, it is outstanding. And, of course, it's the Wizard of Oz. So it's a wonderful sort of system from that point of view. I mean, just looking at the lineup, I mean, I'm sadly, I won't be there. But, you know, what can I say? It's the 5th of April to the 12th of April. So, as we said, you know, literally, as you hear this going, unless, you, of course, you've downloaded the podcast beforehand, in which case, fine. Good on you. But you can click your heels and join Dorothy on her whirlwind adventure at Lincoln's award-winning theatre this Easter. I see the line of the use of the notion whirlwind there, Ollie. That was very impressive.
Yeah. There might be a tornado or two thrown in there. You never know.
Talk us through this phenomenal production by, of course, producer, writer and director and theatre owner, Natalie Hayes Cowley.
Yeah, she doesn't like to go by halves, does she? She goes all in, Natalie. Yeah, so we started doing the Easter Pantos. It's kind of a tradition going back years and years with Lincoln Theatre. So when Natalie and Mike came to take over the theatre, they wanted to bring the Easter productions back, which they did. First one being in 2018 with Alice in Wonderland. And it's kind of grown into a bit of a family favourite amongst Lincoln audiences. So we've been bringing it back and back and back. Obviously, last year was our most successful to date with The Jungle Book. So no pressure there. Wizard of Oz is this year. It's a family favourite story anyway, so I think people will come in their droves to see it. Really exciting cast. We have Sandy Bogle, who was actually in Aladdin back in 2017, Christmas Panto. She's probably best known for her featuring on Gogglebox, which chatting about this with somebody the other day, is the idea of Gogglebox being a success it has been is mind-blowing, really. Such a simple concept. Watching people watch TV, but everybody seems to love it. So Sandy Bogle, a big social media following, lots of fans. So I think we'll have lots of fans of her in to see her.
It's interesting you said that because up next on the program, obviously we're not wishing our lives away, but I'm doing a feature with a chap who's an expert in esports, and I feel the same about esports as I do about Gogglebox. Why would you actually watch to pay somebody else play a computer game when you're watching the playing of that computer game via esports? It somehow seems too meta for me, too meta in all sorts of ways.
It does, but it works, doesn't it? So there we go. Alongside Sandy, we've got a great cast as well. We've got Aaron Wilson. He appeared as Bagheera in Jungle Book last year. He was also the baddie Goldie and Donatello in our Christmas Panto, Cinderella. Dan Badrick, who was Dandini in our Christmas Panto, he's back as a Scarecrow. And also, really excitingly for Dan, following his appearance as Dandini in Cinderella, he was voted, so he's been nominated for Best Supporting Artist at the British Pantomime Awards, which is a huge, huge achievement. It's literally, he's one of five people. The Pantomime Awards goes to over 240 venues. So to be one of five, that's quite a big deal. So yeah, looking for, the only shame for him is the actual award ceremony is when he's on stage here. So it's a bit of a shame for him, that one, but such the life of an actor.
Absolutely, it's very important. And of course, the whole essence of pantomime will be there. So Oliver, what can Kathy expect? I mean, what does she need to prep for? I mean, again, we need to treat our American citizens with TLC. Might not be used to the kind of voraciousness, the sort of excitement that works through there. I mean, I've tried to break her in stage by stage by introducing her to some of the most awful singing I've ever heard in my entire life after the show, in terms of the karaoke of the Swan. It plumbs new depths, which I know is going to be the complete opposite of the quality that Kathy's going to experience at the Royal Pantomime. So what tips have you actually got for her?
Well, good news, Kathy, I haven't put you in the front row, so you're off the hook there. Anybody in the first couple of rows are basically in the firing line for getting picked on, so that's good. Audience interaction, I think, is kind of what Panto all boils down to. It's tons of laughs, flashy costumes, massive dance routines, but most of all, audience interaction. You've got to be ready for those "he's behind you" and "oh no, he's not." So yeah, Kathy, warm up your voice for a bit of interaction, I say.
So warming up the voice, which is good, we can appreciate that. But also, because we felt, let's just spread the word. Let's get these midweek drivettes back into society once again and actually doing these location reports, etc. We can also welcome an ACE level one, or as we refer to them, level four students these days, where she's actually reading The Joys of Communications and Public Relations at the University of Lincoln. It's Hermione. Hermione, hiya. Welcome to the production. Now, Hermione, being a lass from Southend, I know it's almost as glamorous as Miami, Kathy, but, you know, these things happen. Hermione, what are your kind of experiences of pantomime? Have you been to pantomime before?
When I was younger, I used to go to the pantomimes all the time at the Cliffs Theatre. It's not that far from where I live, and I literally remember, mainly when I was younger, but it was, like, a big, like, family day out. My nan would take all me and my cousins, and, yeah, it was, like, a big thing.
Okay. So this, I presume, though, will be your first ever Easter pantomime. Is that right?
Yeah, it will be.
Excellent. Okay. So, Ollie, again, bearing in mind Hermione from Southend, to be precise, would you like to sort of give her any sort of thoughts in terms of what she gets out, where she also goes along with Kathy, so Kathy and Hermione, as part of our press representatives on Wednesday at the Midweek Drive. As the listener is actually listening to this, they will be making their way to the new Theatre Royal Lincoln. Wow.
Well, I suppose you're already one step ahead, Hermione, if you've been to Panto's already, so you know what to expect in terms of audience participation and all the fun and games that comes on with. But one thing that is unique to this production, The Wizard of Oz, is the inclusion of dogs. So, yes, Toto. We have four dogs. They kind of alternate the role. Got Cody, Gizmo, Tilly, and Pumpkin. Now, I can't even express how much in reaction we've had to Pumpkin. For anybody that doesn't know, Pumpkin is a paralyzed Westie. She kind of shot to fame about 18 months ago. She's featured on shows like BBC Breakfast, and basically she's just raising the awareness of dogs with disabilities. And I kid you not, all these celebrities announcements we've had over the years, so all these big celebrities starting our pantomimes, Pumpkin, the paralyzed Westie, has had the most reaction, all of them put together. It's been madness. So I'm really looking forward to seeing her strut stuff, I suppose. She'll be on Wednesday night when Kathy and Hermione. I was going to say Henrietta for a moment. I was just mixing it up for a bit. Well, Hermione come along. So you'll be able to enjoy that.
I mean, what can we say? The pumpkin, the paralyzed Westie, Kathy, I could see that you're already kind of moved by those thoughts, really.
I mean, I think like many people, I'm a sucker for any sort of dog. And then you, on top of that, you're telling me already what kind of dog to prepare for. I'm like, my heart. And I think I'll just have a really hard time separating. And that will be the I need to meet the dog. Is that possible?
Well, we never know. We'll see. You see if she she might have quite a few signatures to sign, so she might pop out after. Let's have a look. Let's hope so. I want to cuddle with her, to be fair.
I'm gonna be so starstruck, so positive. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I'm gonna do with myself, but I was already excited and so high my expectations of this is going.
Yeah, well, Kathy, pause for thought. See what I did there? Pause, dogs. Oh,
I felt it.
Hermione, what about yourself? Looking forward to The Wizard of Oz, the Easter pantomime?
Definitely, especially with the dogs. And like Kathy, I think I'll have to really try and not shed a tear or a few because it's just...
Hermione, I get the feeling we're not in Lincoln anymore, but never mind. So another line. I mean... Ollie, clearly this is going to be a success. We know that. And I've got to ask the question, are there any tickets still available for the public to actually come along and see this awesome production?
As fast as tickets are selling, there are still some around. Yep. It runs for East Holiday, so we've got matinee performances and evening performances. Best availability tends to be in the evenings. But I mean, yeah, head over to the website. There's all, you can see exactly what seats are available there.
Well, let's open it up for general questions. And we are focusing very much on the Easter pantomime for this particular aspect. Where Royal Radio will resume normal service, I've been assured by Ollie, in the very near future, where we actually look at all the other events that are coming up with the new Theatre Royal Lincoln and so on. But Kathy, any questions from yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to know, how long has everyone been preparing for this? How long has the practice and rehearsals been leading up to Easter, I guess?
You think a long, long time. Basically, Natalie writes the script and everything, and the backstage guys, they all come together months in advance to decide on set pieces, costumes, and the script gets sent out about 2 or 3 months beforehand. But rehearsals for the actors literally only started this Tuesday gone. So they literally have about 7 or 8 days to rehearse a performance. The backstage guys started the fit up on Monday, I believe. Because we are a theatre, we have touring shows all year round. So we had a show in over the weekend, so they literally can't start everything until that's all sort all out. So yeah, it's a very hectic week. I'm doing a sensible thing and staying in my office out of the way whilst they all crack on with that.
And I'm curious too to know, because you know, it's the Wizard of Oz. It has a lot of technical aspects of it. I mean, from the story I know, flying monkeys, magic, yeah. Things like that. And how is that incorporated with like just preparing the stage?
You know what? I'll leave it most of it as a surprise because personally, I haven't seen it all come together yet. They always have a couple of tricks up their sleeves. For example, last year in the Jungle Book, I can say this now because everybody's seen it, but there was when Car came out, it was actually, it was about a 20-foot size snake. It pretty much took up the whole stage. So Natalie and the backstage team have always got a few tricks up their sleeves. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to surprise us with this time. There will be, we have the wizard himself appears on a magic screen towards the end, and for Lincoln audiences, he's a very well known local celebrity. I can't divulge yet, but I think people will be happy to see his face on that screen.
I'm excited for the mystery. I can't.
There you are.
Hermione, I mean, just think if when I threw that line out, what were you actually doing over the Easter period in the seminar for comms and society? And you'd said, oh, I'm going back to Southend. Just think of what you would have missed on that sort of basis. You know, here we are, you know, on board. Any questions for yourself, Hermione, in terms of the new Theatre Royal Lincoln? And indeed, is this going to be your first time at the new Theatre Royal Lincoln?
Yeah, it will be. I haven't visited there before, so I'm very, very excited to see it all in the sort of layout of all the rooms and everything. But one question I have is, how do you get like the dogs involved? Because obviously they're not people, you can't really make them follow certain lines. Is it just like a very like strict training, or like what's behind that?
So I believe from experience of seeing previous production of Wizard of Oz, it's kind of mixed between having the dogs on a lead and also holding the dogs if they're comfortable with being held. Basically, we put a few weeks ago, we put a press release out and some mentions on social media about dog auditions. So then we had about 20 dogs come to the theatre, and basically our Natalie, our artistic director, along with a couple of helpers, kind of tried to recreate an audience atmosphere. So we had loud noise playing, cheers and things like that to see how the dogs would react. And they also just did a few things like simple recall to see how they would react to Dorothy, who was played by Leah Appleyard, who actually came to the audition, so she could get a feel with the dogs themselves. So they do come for a few rehearsals. Obviously, like a human, they're probably not going to remember any lines or anything. So it's kind of very much on the day, bring them on a lead or hold them and see how they go. But from what I've heard, these dogs are brilliant. So I think it's going to be, I mean, this is what they say. They say never work with kids or animals, don't they? But I think that always adds an extra element of fun. So we'll see what happens. Fun and games.
There have been dogs on the New Theatre Royal Lincoln stage before, but normally it's the amateur dramatic people who have actually sort of brought them on board.
Yes, they do, yeah.
You know, as a matter of course, really. But it's nice to know that obviously our canine friends have the opportunity for stardom as well. And the cattle call they had to attend, obviously, to actually work through that. You know, four of them have actually succeeded in terms of that. But I suspect in terms of our paralysed Westie, clearly she was ahead of the game in any way.
Yeah, I mean, when we actually met Pumpkin, she came to Cinderella to meet some of the cast. I think Jake Quickenden, she came to meet him and have some photos taken with him. And straight away, then Natalie met her and thought, I love Pumpkin. So when we put the call out for dogs to audition, Pumpkin's owner actually got in touch and said, we'd love Pumpkin to audition. So there was no special treatment there. We had to still take through the whole process to see how she reacted. Because at the end of the day, as a theatre family, we all love dogs here. We're all massive dog fans. And we appreciate that the dog needs to be happy in that environment. If she wasn't happy being on stage, there's no chance she'd be cast for it. But yeah, fortunately, she loved it. So yeah, see what happens next Wednesday.
And are there going to be musical numbers as well? Will I be singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow? Is that a case of, no, we're doing our own version?
It's one of those funny ones with Panto. You often put your own songs in, but there will be a couple of Wizard of Oz ones in that you'll recognise. For example, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Yeah.
Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. But that was
Not sure that one's featured in.
Well, in Liz Truss is so yesterday news. We don't want to go down that
let's not get there. Yeah.
Heavy political scenario. Kathy, any further questions or queries you've got about what will be your first experience of pantomime in Britain, and indeed, I think your first trip to the New Theatre Royal Lincoln?
Yeah. Actually, I know that audience participation is encouraged. Does that mean singing along is also encouraged?
It depends. There's often little skits where the actors themselves will give you a line to sing and you kind of re-sing it back to them. Often, I'm not sure, I don't think it features in this show, but in some pantomimes you'll have it like almost like a battle. So one side of the audience will be singing and then the other side sings it, whoever's the loudest. I don't believe that features in this one, but you might be able to get your vocal cords going, yeah.
Okay, all right. Keep me on my toes. I like
that's it, yeah. Like it.
Of course, you can go to ntrlincoln.co.uk. That's the usual three W's before that. newtheatrelincoln.co.uk to find other details. Let's do a little tease ahead. I've seen in the wind, so to speak, Oliver, in the wind, the hurricane, yes, that a certain B. Holly is going to be, or his music, shall we say, will be coming to Lincoln. That's quite exciting.
Yes, this is a huge deal, actually. Touring, huge musical that tour the UK don't often come to Lincoln because, frankly, we don't have the theatre.
No, they've heard the karaoke, they said we just this step away.
I mean, as a theatre, we seat under 500 seats. So, for a lot of touring musicals, they don't see at the end of the day enough profit in it. But our programmer has been working hard behind the scenes, and to get a musical this size, which is the most successful, it's the longest running jukebox, well, not a jukebox musical, but a musical of its type. It's been running for 34 years. I've seen it myself. You might have seen it, Alex. It's a brilliant show.
Yeah. It's the thigh slapping that beats me. It's the way they actually do the thigh slapping. That's always very good without any pantomime at all. But they slap their thighs for every day in every way. Marvellous.
That's it, yeah. So I'm incredibly excited to be working on this one. It's like we've spoken about many times, we get a lot of great tributes through, but this is actually a musical about Buddy Holly, his life, his story. And like I say, it's been going on for years. It's brilliant. I can't wait to work on it, really. It's going to be great.
And it's so people can book well in advance. I think it's autumn we're looking for that to arrive.
It is. It's the 9th through to 11th of October. Tickets are all on sale already. Going fast, as you'd expect. Thanks for mentioning it.
Fantastic stuff. Great stuff. Hermione, any final thoughts from yourself in terms of life, the universe, or indeed, I don't know, Kathy was keen about the vocal aspects. You might sort of want to say, can you wear your tiara to the actual thing? Because you'll be up in the royal box area.
That's a very good... Am I allowed to wear my tiara and my little wand?
No judgment here. If you want to go for that, you go for it.
Fantastic.
Splendid. Excellent. Ollie, it's been awesome connecting with you, good self. I say up next, after a little musical break from The Wizard of Oz, we'll be checking out the notion of esports and virtual and augmented reality and a whole range of other factors, etc. We can guarantee, of course, that the new Theatre Royal Lincoln, it is actually there in person in 3D and all wonderfully together in all sorts of ways. Kathy and Hermione will, of course, be the official Midweek Drivettes. Will be there. And I'm sure, Ollie, you'd be happy to have them report back and express their joy and happiness, especially at Pumpkin, and probably many more, as far as the actual things are concerned. I mean, it's interesting how Pumpkin has clearly swept the board, and although we've got Gogglebox's soul in there as well, we're still sort of looking at this whole sort of essence of, the Pumpkin steals the show, which is understandable from that point of view. So that's all great. Whilst we're talking pantomime, of course, let's give a little mention again that you can always prepare ahead, because Aladdin is going to be the Christmas pantomime from that point of view, 8th of December through to the 7th of January. And I think I'm setting the scene basically that I need to come back and see a pantomime again. It was pre-pandemic last time I actually saw it. I can't manage to get to Wizard of Oz. I think I need to actually book in for Aladdin, basically, which is...
Welcome anytime.
Well, Ollie, it's been wonderful. Resonance Rewind will return. Thanks to Hermione, of course. Thanks to Kathy. That's it. Keep on resonating and, well, not Resonance. Did I say Resonance Rewind? That's a different show entirely. Royal Radio. I mean, normally Kathy actually says, what are you doing? What are you doing? Just get the show right. Royal Radio, as in New Theatre Royal Lincoln, of course. We'll be back. So obviously, keep on theatricising. No, maybe not. Is there such a word?
Wonderful Wizard of Oz. We hear he is a whiz of a whiz, if ever a whiz there was. If ever, oh, ever a whiz there was, the Wizard of Oz has won because of the wonderful things he does. We're off to see the Wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Artificial intelligence, a whole range of aspects and key things that certainly impact on our everyday world and everyday existence from that point of view. But how about, dealing with the metaverse? I mean, this grand scheme that, of course, Mr. Zuckerberg was keen to actually develop from that point of view. Is it going to revolutionize education and our lives from that point of view? Esports, the virtual reality world? Well, we're going to try and find out over the next few moments, because we're delighted to actually welcome somebody who's spearheading the use of this high technology at King's Inter High. That's the wonderful Nathan O'Grady. How are you, Nathan?
Hi, Alex. Good to talk to you.
Excellent. So, I mean, I can pretty much guarantee from my own point of view, I am a organic life form, a human being, interacting with yourself, who I'm presuming will have passed the Turing test and actually is not an artificial intelligence from that point of view. And we're both in the world of education, myself from the point of view of the wonderful world of the University of Lincoln, and, of course, yourself within King's Inter High. So we start off from that. Can we use these as tools, or will the tools take over from us?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So at King's Inter High, the way we're using metaverse learning is to enhance the learning that's already happening in the classroom. So we're not in any way looking to replace teachers we're not replacing traditional lessons. We're simply using it where it can add something to that experience. So for example, in geography, it might be going on a field trip to somewhere else in the world with a click of the fingers. Or for history, it could be going back in time and enhancing what students can learn in that way. And I think AI is something that should be, and that we're certainly experimenting with using similarly. It's always going to be about the responsible use of these technologies and using them in an appropriate way.
Now, as I was traveling across the country a few moments ago, actually, I was tuning into the notion of the future by Orchestral Moves in the Dark, and the future will be silent and so on. And I was just fascinated to see the figures, actually, that 41%, that's nearly half of UK parents, don't understand the metaverse. Now, back in the day, of course, if you wanted to actually get your VCR recorder fully functional, you needed to get a person under 6 years of old age to actually do that. Do you think that actually there needs to be a separate set of courses indeed for parents who literally are completely bamboozled by this strange virtual world that is literally at their children's fingertips?
Yeah, I mean, the concept of the metaverse and virtual reality in general is still an emerging technology. So parents, students, teachers, myself, everybody's still learning exactly how this all works. I think the really important thing is to make sure that parents have all of the information that they need to be comfortable with the use of virtual reality in schools. So, for example, the metaverse learning that we do is all entirely safeguarded. Only our students and our teachers can enter our virtual classrooms. Nobody from the public can enter. They're not going to meet anybody they shouldn't. They're not going to see anything they shouldn't. Now, of course, there is a metaverse. Meta's metaverse is beyond what we control. And so it's important that both students and parents understand the risks, just as they understand the risks of using the internet. And I think as time goes on, that understanding and those learnings will spread more widely. But there is a responsibility, especially on education institutions at the moment, to ensure that people are aware of what the risks are and how to mitigate them.
Over the last millennia, humanity's had a number of revolutions, starting off, of course, with Gutenberg and the printing press back in the 1490s. Of course, the Industrial Revolution impacted us. We've obviously impacted the information revolution. Do you feel as though actually, just as all of those previous technological aspects determined changes in terms of our way which we were working, etc., do you feel as though that the IT revolution and indeed the onset of esports and virtual reality, etc., is going to have a similarly massive effect in terms of everybody's lives?
I certainly think that the virtual reality and the artificial intelligence are that revolution for this generation. And I think one of the really important things to remember, and I say this to people a lot, is that when television came along, for example, we were nervous about having televisions in the home and what effect that would have on children. And similarly, when cinemas both first became popular, we were worried that the train on the screen was going to come and cause us harm.
Oh, but that was 120 years ago, Nathan. I mean, we moved on since then, obviously.
We have, but the concept is very similar. It's similar with the internet as well. There's always an initial uncertainty and fear around these things. And as time goes on and we develop an understanding, we become more and more comfortable. So I think these things are the revolution equivalent to those things in their time. And only time will tell exactly how they're going to develop. I certainly wouldn't want to predict exactly what direction it's going to go. It seems like artificial intelligence develops at a rapid pace over the last 6 months. But I think people will become comfortable with experience, as is traditional in the way that humans have done things in the past.
One of my final year sports journalism students has been spending the last few months busily working on a dissertation on esports. And it's been quite fascinating seeing the research he's been carrying out in terms of obviously Korea and other Eastern countries in terms of how advanced they are and how phenomenally popular esports actually happens to be. Now, you're the esports lead at Kings Inter High. In terms of that, is it the end for the traditional PE teacher?
I don't think so. No, not at all. I think it's sort of an upgrade to what we normally see as sports. You know, Kings Inter High is a fully online school. So for us, esports makes an awful lot of sense. We don't have the facilities for a football team or a netball team, but what we can do is a digital esports team. And there's a real community that's formed around that. But British Esports, who run the inter-school competition, the student championships in the UK, have hundreds of schools around the country who are competing week to week. And it's giving an opportunity to a different type of student. There are some students who are not naturally inclined to go ahead and play football or any traditional sport, but they are really engaged with the idea of esports. And as your student will have found in their research, the skills that it builds, like communication, teamwork, problem solving, these are all skills that we want students to be taken away from school and into the world of work in the future. So there's a real benefit there outside of the entertainment factor too.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the old phrase that we bandied about in the 90s, that the geeks shall inherit the earth, might be manifesting before our eyes. Meta is one of those wonderful words which, in terms of meta narrative, indeed the planet meta in the much beloved Gerry Anderson series Space 1999 is something which is beyond there, which is out there, etc. Do you feel that in terms of the metaverse that'll eventually be superseded by a kind of meta metaverse?
Well, possibly, you might be right. I mean, it's really important, and I think it is complicated to distinguish between Meta's metaverse and the metaverse as a whole. Meta have kind of taken ownership of that term and use it very heavily for their marketing. And so there is an impression that this is controlled by, as you say, Mr. Zuckerberg and very few others. But there's a lot of spaces out there which are included in what the whole of the metaverse is, which are, you know, provided for specific purposes like education that are completely detached from Meta. So it'll be interesting to see how it all develops, really, because I think that terminology might be something that we see evolve very shortly to separate this concept from the company Meta itself. But the concept itself is clearly here. It's not going anywhere now. It's only going to grow, much like the AI. And I think it will be increasingly embraced over time.
And Nathan, from your own particular journey across cyberspace, when did you first become attracted to the whole notion of, well, it's the keyboard and then it's the virtual immersive system, and then I might even go down the line of Oculus Rift?
Well, when I was very small, my dad was a computer technician, so I learned at a very young age what all the parts did and how to put them together. And I think he probably gave me the best start in life in that regard. But certainly the virtual reality, I mean, I'm interested in gaming myself. I'm a keen gamer. And a lot of these technologies came through the games industry about 10, 15 years ago before they've reached the stage that they are now, where Meta has inherited it and Kingsdon to High has inherited it for education. So one thing I always like to do is look at these technologies that are emerging in a small way in industries like gaming.
Well, again, it makes
fascinating. That will later come about and be used in completely different ways. I think it's very exciting.
It makes fascinating times, and I suppose there is that old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. At least we actually managed to have avoided the metaverse equivalent of the TikTok video, because that's a line in the sand I think I don't wish to cross at this stage. But
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. Nathan, where can people find out further details about Kings Into High and, of course, the fabulous work that you're doing here?
Yeah, they can head to kingsintohigh.co.uk or follow us on all social media. They can see exactly what we've been up to.
And just one minor little thing, basically, in terms of AR, of course, are we talking augmented reality in that particular instance?
We are looking at augmented reality as well, you know, the ability to mix digital and physical world. And there's a lot of people who think that's the direction that virtual reality is going to spread increasingly in. So it'll be very interesting to see how that develops over the next few years.
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure we can rely on a good self to keep us updated with respect to that. Nathan O'Grady, VR/AR and esports lead at Kings Into High. Huge thanks. And I'm allowing my virtual avatar to wave at you to actually say farewell for now.
Thanks, Alex.
The future was not supposed to be like this. Well, if Mr. Zuckerberg had his way, probably we'd never leave the metaverse, but that's not necessarily the best of things to look forward to. According to recent research by Magnum, as technology continues to advance, almost three quarters of young people aged between 18 and 34 believe that we'll be spending more and more time in the virtual world in the future. Well, is this a good thing? How do we actually cope with this? We need to bring on board the true expert that is neuroscientist and best-selling author extraordinaire. It's Dr. Jack Lewis. How are you, Jack?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to connect with your good self. IRL, almost, although we're interacting via screens, of course. We haven't put different avatars up to actually relate to this particular interview. But clearly, if we put our headsets on and so on, we'd be in the metaverse. We'd be addressing that. What were your thoughts on this particular research by Magnum?
Well, they asked me to put together some pleasure guidelines. So people can find them, just search for Magnum pleasure guidelines. And it's 10 tips for how to maximize your happiness and pleasure offline, and another 10 tips for happiness and pleasure online and offline. We've got to cover all the bases. So the online tips really, which includes, of course, the metaverse. You know, if you're looking at screens, then you're not really offline. It doesn't matter whether those screens are attached to your headset that you wear on your head, or indeed are on a smartphone screen. It's still a screen. And so it's really, boils down to the various things that can happen if you spend too much time doing these lovely things. There's a real Goldilocks zone where a little bit of social media, for example, a little bit of interacting socially in the metaverse is good for you. Happiness levels go up because you feel more connected to other people. But as we know, mainly from the internet, spend too much time in social media, and it can lead to quite frightening levels of anxiety and depression. So it's simple things. It's things like, to maximize your pleasure online in the metaverse, you need to just keep an eye on how long you're spending in there. One of the tips for the internet is the 20-20-20 rule. That's a really good one. So every 20 minutes, you should focus on something 20 foot in the distance. That's about 6 meters for 20 seconds. So it's all about allowing your eyes to focus beyond the screen, arm's length, if you're on your phone or on the internet, and only at really a few centimeters length if you're in the metaverse.
I did a personal audit in terms of meetings online versus real life connections over the next 48 hours. And I've got about 12 virtual interviews, 2 virtual Teams meetings via MS Teams, etc. And then about 6 hours of kind of in-person teaching and other aspects. Now, allowing for all of that, is variety the spice of life, or is it a case of, welcome to the 21st century, that's how we're operating?
Well, I'm delighted to hear how much time you're going to spend in real life interactions. So variety is definitely the spice of life. I am a huge advocate of availing ourselves of all the options, but just not to lose track of the importance of old fashioned ways of doing things. So let's take the example of social interactions that you're describing. When you're in person, you get so much more social information. Like, the brain is extremely well equipped with all of these circuits that enable us to pick up on people's body language, whether that's eye movements, facial expressions, body posture. These all help us understand at an unconscious level how the person we're interacting with is feeling. Now, a lot of this information is lost on Microsoft Teams or whatever. If you're looking at someone's appearance on a display, you don't catch the micro expressions because of the frame rate. If you're in the metaverse, you're not even represented by yourself. It's an avatar. It's a digital representation of you that doesn't show any of that body language. So all you've really got is voice. The metaverse, video conferencing, it's no better than a phone call. And I think we can all tell the difference of how closely you interact with someone when your arms reach across the table from them, say in a bar or a cafe or something, compared to being on the phone. And the internet and metaverse, it doesn't give us that sense of intimacy and connectedness that our brains really need to experience to feel properly socially connected. And feeling properly socially connected has so many positive effects. It improves your life expectancy. It greatly reduces the incidence of things like depression and anxiety.
I was astounded to see that 1 in 9 of those surveyed admitted to spending 8 hours or more stuck in the same position while staring at a screen. Now, I know.
Sorry to speak over you, but I was appalled. I was shocked enough that people, you know, regularly will sit, you know, doing things for much shorter periods of time. But that is terrible for your posture. It's terrible for your eyes. When you're looking at screens, it's really odd. We forget to blink. The rate of blinking drops to about 4 to 6 blinks per second because we're so often consumed, not per second, per minute, 4 to 6 blinks per minute when we're looking at a screen, because our attention is really sort of absorbed by what we're doing, and we don't blink as much as we should do. Whereas when you're reading like off of paper, you would blink maybe 14 to 16 times per second. That's how many times your eyes replace the protective liquid film over the surface of your eyes, which helps keep them healthy and happy, happy eyes. We don't realize these things, and we allow ourselves to be sucked into, I don't know, like YouTube black holes of wonderment. We get sucked into the sort of auto start of the next episode in a box set that we're watching online, and we just forget to get up, move around, blink at a normal rate, stretch our bodies, and ideally go and find something more interesting to do that uses your own initiative a little bit. That's another thing that's really lacking if you over avail yourself of these amazing technologies. Anything to do with a screen basically involves someone else has curated what you're going to do, and they choose what you see. You never get to use your imagination. You never get to sort of just go off on a voyage of discovery where you follow your whims and do things. And that's the point of this, you know, the Magnum Pleasure Guidelines. It's all about getting people to realize that real life has incredible pleasures to offer, such as an ice cream, and that we need to remember to not get too sucked in to the digital alternatives.
And indeed, Magnum has released a short film featuring virtual avatar Luna with her journey to escape the metaverse in pursuit, as you said, of the real life proud pleasures of a Magnum ice cream. Ultimately, is that a case of, look, we have 5 senses. We are connected from a neurophysiological point of view. And whilst it may well be a tremendous nod in the direction of, I don't know, a yogi specialist to actually spend 8 hours totally immobile, as you said, it's not good for back posture and a variety of other bits and pieces. And we need balance ultimately.
I'm so glad you drew attention to all 5 senses, because the thing about the internet and the metaverse, it only stimulates 2. You know, it's only vision and hearing. But what about taste? What about smell? What about the sense of touch, like the physical sense of touch under our fingertips or on our skin? Those get hugely overlooked with technology and digital. I mean, there are some virtual reality things that have haptics where you're controlling robotic arms or whatever. But, you know, I really like this campaign because it reminds us that a lot of the greatest pleasures, that, you know, the reward pathway, which makes us feel pleasure, it evolved primarily to encourage us to eat when hungry, drink when thirsty, and engage in reproductive behaviors. That's why, like, all mammals feel happiness as an incentive to do work, to seek out those 3 things. It's what kept our species alive until this point in time. And so to kind of turn your back on all of those visceral pleasures, which we're doing if we overuse the internet and the metaverse, it's just a real shame. And of course, the tech companies are extremely good at making these things moorish. The more it's an attention economy, right? The more we stay on their products, then the more they can sell advertising or whatever. And so that's, you know, we are the product, essentially, if we're doing that. If we're consuming things for free, we are the product. I prefer to consume products. I prefer other objects to be products. So I think it's just really interesting to bear in mind that all of this wonderful free stuff that we're consuming, if we overuse it, it will end up costing us somehow. And usually, because we're displacing time we could be spending doing the stuff that we evolved to find deeply pleasurable.
We'll just conclude, Dr. Jack, with the summation of those top tips. I mean, take a 10-minute break from the screens every 60 minutes, or as you said, the 20-20 rule. Doing yogic air eye exercises in your hourly 10-minute screen break. Limiting social media to between 1 and 2 hours per day makes perfect sense. Don't doom scroll. And don't binge watch TV. And one which I particularly think is very useful, although I must admit I'm guilty of this myself, banning phones, tablets, laptops, etc. from the bedroom.
I'm so glad you listed those off. There are others. You listed six of the 10, but that's a great way to do it. And just to say, the thou shalt not binge one, the data is getting pretty strong now with regard to if you auto start a second episode, that's not the end of the world. But some people just let it go and go and go and go, and that is really becoming quite strongly related to the opposite of happiness.
And how can people find out further information about this Magnum survey and indeed your own work? Of course, sort your brain out, Dr. Jack.
Yeah, so it's very straightforward. The thing to search for are the Magnum Pleasure Guidelines. You get my 10 top tips for online, my 10 top tips for offline, how to make your life happier and healthier. And as well as Sort Your Brain Out, which I did a second edition of a couple of years ago, I also wrote a book called The Science of Sin. So thank you very much indeed for having me. This has been a great interview.
It's been an absolute delight. Dr. Jack Lewis, neuroscientist and, as we noted, best-selling author of Sort Your Brain Out and, of course, other fantastic texts. Keep on enjoying reality, Dr. Jack.
I will do. You too. Keep up that good balance of reality and unreality.
Well, we are approaching the season of Easter, and of course that leads us to probably take out and actually take off and do a whole variety of other bits and pieces. But if you might think about, well, let's get in touch with the greater elements, etc. Let's go and climb a mountain, etc. Beware, because Mountain Rescue for England and Wales volunteers are indeed bracing themselves for a busy Easter holiday as an influx of visitors are setting out to explore the nation's remote areas. And the need to actually be prepared cannot be highlighted enough. So to actually do that, we're delighted to welcome from the world of Ordnance Survey and much other marvellous stuff, etc. It's Nick Giles. How are you, Nick?
I'm very good. Thanks, Alex.
Good. Yeah, you're Managing Director for Leisure and Ordnance Survey. Obviously, let's get your title spot on from that perspective. Let's talk about this side of things, though, because there's always the danger that, you know, when I know the weather's not great at present, but even in inclement weathers, you might sort of think, right, we're going to go up that mountain, etc. And you just don't, you know, you do the equivalent of basically sort of climbing the mountain in a set of stilettos, basically.
Well, yeah, we've seen a sort of massive increase in terms of people getting out walking, discovering Great Britain. And actually, Easter period is a real time where that sort of takes off. We saw an 81% rise last year, so expecting very similar this year, especially after the winter we've had. But weather is just one of the issues and one of the things you need to prepare for. And it's all about preparation. If you do not want to be one of the statistics of mountain rescue, and as you say, they get incredibly busy around this time of the year, then just a little bit of preparation before you go. Check your weather forecasts. We've all been there on those bright, sunny days where you think it's going to be fine and you're there in shorts and a T-shirt, and then all of a sudden the heavens opened and you're soaked through to the skin. Actually, just thinking about that in advance, just thinking about where you're going. If you're heading up a mountain, then the Met Office have some fantastic mountain weather forecasts that will give you some real detail around where you're going. So that's just one part of being prepared. It's all about preparation and making sure you stay safe.
Well, when you actually acknowledge that one in three call-outs last year of the over 3,000 call-outs that were handled by Mountain Rescue England and Wales, those problems were because of basic mistakes, poor planning, 17%, so only a fifth caused by human error, another 9% by bad decision making, and of course 9% by inexperience. It can't really be stressed enough that you do need to actually have, as you say, that whole notion of preparation and things in mind, and then of course you can have an enjoyable time and not a stressful time.
Absolutely. And yeah, the preparation, there's sort of three simple steps you can do to prepare for going outdoors and not being one of those statistics of mountain rescue. So first of all, we've talked about the weather, so check your weather. Second piece is around the having the right equipment. So make sure you've got the right mapping. Paper map, but great is great because it will never run out of batteries. And if you drop it in a puddle, you can still decipher it. But know how to read it. It's a skill that we were all taught at school, if we cast our minds way back when. But actually, it's a skill that if you don't use it a lot, like every muscle, it will go. So there's some very simple guides. You can learn to read the real basics of map reading in about 10 minutes, and that'll get you out on a boat. If you're using mobile technology, make sure you've got the right app on your phone. Mountain Rescue would recommend the OS Maps app. which you can download from the app stores, which gives you a lot of the detail of the mapping that you get in a paper map. But you'd also get features such as route planning, 3D mapping, even some AR tools to tell you what's on the horizon. So there's loads of things you can do through there. If you think you're going to be out in the dark, take a torch. If you're out in the mountains, it gets very dark very quickly. So it's not like going out at night in towns and cities. So take a torch with you. Extra layer of clothing, always useful, because if you do get stuck, then you'll get cold very quickly. So make sure you've got the right equipment there. Obviously, water and sweets are always good encouragement to get you up and moving. And the final piece is really just to let people know, or let somebody know, where you're going and when you'll be back. So if you do get into trouble and you're not back in time, and rather than just knowing, well, we know we went out at some point, but we're not quite sure where and when he should be back, then they'll be able to get in touch with emergency services. And hopefully, if you do need to call out Mountain Rescue, they'll be able to find you quickly.
Yes, so something out in terms of the paper map. It's good to hear you actually still citing the paper map as a useful thing, because clearly mobile phone signals can actually go, and wonderful though OS Maps might be as an app, you might think, oh, I don't know, where's the signal gone? It's probably worthwhile having some kind of plastic covering as well, so that in the event of rain, you're not left with a soggy, wet map that actually starts falling and disintegrating to pieces.
Absolutely. And the paper maps, I mean, they're described, and the best description I've heard was the detail-encrusted guides to the most beautiful islands in the world. So, you know, there's a huge amount of context that you get from being able to see a lot broader than a 5-inch screen that you'll be able to, that you get through a smartphone. And that just might uncover some of those sort of hidden jewels that you might, if I take a half hour diversion through here, you get to see a fantastic waterfall, a ruined castle, and those things that you just don't necessarily... You may miss if you're just looking through the 5-inch screen of a mobile phone. So yes, we still absolutely encourage those, and they can get you out of trouble. So yeah, and also make great seat cushions if you are out in the sunny day.
Do you get much opportunity yourself to actually get out and about, Nick? Or is it a case of, no, I do all my my work as Managing Director of Leisure for Ordnance Survey, staying in the office and just helping others?
No, I try and get out and about as often as I possibly can. At OS, we're all about helping more people get outside more often. So we try to practice what we preach. So yes, I do get out and I do get lost. And that's part of the fun of getting out. But I do also know the right tools to actually get me back on the straight and narrow and find my path and get home safely. So thankfully, I don't think I'd ever live it down if I had to call out Mountain Rescue. Thankfully, I've never had to do that. But I do know a number of very experienced hill walkers and mountaineers who have had to call out Mountain Rescue. So it can happen to anyone. Don't be scared of calling them, but equally make sure you're prepared and it's not down to your error that you're having to get them out.
Yeah, absolutely. And a final question, do you have any particular favourite areas of the country that you've always been fond of? Is that a bit like asking an author to choose their favourite novel, basically? I couldn't possibly, on behalf of Ordnance Survey, say I've got a secret hankering for that particular place.
Well, I'm lucky to live in Dorset, so I love the Jurassic Coast. That's probably my local hunting ground, I suppose. But then we're so fortunate in this country to have so many fantastic places that we can go out and we can go and explore. Our national parks are amongst the best in the world. There's some incredibly varied landscapes, flora, fauna, and just that is at our fingertips, and generally within quite a short distance from pretty much everybody in the UK. So please, you know, go out and enjoy those. Just do it safely. Make sure you've got the right tools. Make sure you've prepared a bit in advance, and don't be a statistic for Mountain Rescue. These guys are volunteers. They're giving up their free time to come and rescue people. So incredible service.
Absolutely. And can you just remind folk once again, Nick, in terms of the best web address to go to find out where those Ordnance Survey apps are?
For the OS Maps app, that's available on any of the app stores. For best safety and navigation advice, please do visit the Mountain Rescue England and Wales website. They've got loads of guides on there. There's loads of simple YouTube videos and guides to learning how to read a paper map. Have a quick look at those, refresh your skills. And if you are venturing out into the mountains, then do check out the Met Office's weather forecasting, especially for their mountain forecast, which is fantastic service.
Excellent. Nick Giles, Managing Director, Brackets Leisure for Ordnance Survey. Huge thanks, and have a great vacation if you get a chance.
Thanks, Alex.
Somewhere over the rainbow. way up high. There's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind. Troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you find me. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Birds fly over the rainbow. Why then, oh, why can't I? Fly beyond the rainbow. Why?